Okay.
Okay. So, welcome to the all school chat of September, in 2026. And obviously, if you're listening to this recording, maybe you were unable to make the call. So, we missed you. We've got lots of people on the call right now. And I want to just go over a little bit of what I'm, looking at for what we're doing today. And what I would like, like I say, I have been really with this Barbolt's basket and all this this wonderful stuff that's supposed to be going on. And in fact, I was expecting some wonderful stuff going on, okay, with Pluto trine Uranus, both of them sextile Neptune. I was looking like, wow, 2026, this is going to be like amazing. We're going to have trine and sextile, and everything's going to just like be fantastic. And I'm experiencing, with world politics, the world situation, a different reality emerging with at the Strait of Hormuz and fertilizer and oil and all, trade and politics and inflation and things like that, kind of tanking a little bit. So in wanting to understand that a little further, I've been just contemplating this Uranus, Uranus, Pluto, Neptune configuration. And I want to be talking about that a little bit. And I also want to be talking about Mars. Because we're coming up, to this place where, Mars is going to be going up to 10 degrees of Virgo, retrograding back to 20 degrees of Leo, and then going forward again and spending, like 6 months within that 20 degree range. If you've got anything, end of Leo, beginning of Virgo, end of Aquarius, beginning of Pisces, end of Gemini, beginning of Cancer, or whatever, But Taurus, Gemini, and Scorpio, Sag, right? You're going to be getting this Mars retrograde energy. I wanted to go into that a little bit. So I was looking at those, and then we have questions. It's not too late. If you go to the All School chat on Telegram and you've got a little question about anything going on, we've got a few questions put up there, and after, after Sol and I both talk for a little bit, we'll jump over to the Telegram chat and answer some questions, and then maybe like open it up to you guys on the call and have a party. So the first of all, first and foremost, I wanted to just pass the baton over to Sol because did you just gave lecture at UAP on all of this Prometheus, and she's like fresh out of the gate. So I'm gonna pass it over to her and let Sol go on for 10, 15 minutes or whatever here on her research and My thing.
your
Let me see
thing.
if I
Take it
can,
away.
as we. Let's see if I can find some maps here as well to show you, because we're moving into a very interesting historical phase. And of course, I'm also aware of the negative implications of the current times. We live in a very destabilized time, and I think one of the major points that I kind of wanted to get through in this particular lecture was that if you consider Pluto and Uranus, that Pluto is this incredibly volcanic force that comes from the underground, this incredible energy that is just suddenly manifesting into actual change. And Uranus is the sky god. So it's kind of like they have to kind of like figure out a way to embody. It's the embodiment of Uranus that happens with Pluto Uranus, basically. But it's moving the, it's kind of what you call the continental drift. We used to be one continent on Earth. And then you had all this inner activity and outer activity as well, I'd like to add, earthquakes being kind of informed by the cosmic environment in which Earth is moving through. So
it's kind of like a cooperation between heaven and earth. And then these shifts, you had the shift from Pangaea, which was one continent, into these different continents we see today, separated by the oceans. So that, earth is always constantly eroding like that. It's always changing and shifting. And we have something called tectonic plates, which are basically, these little, like, you can see if you have seen a picture of the skull of the brain, you have like, it's not like one solid piece, it's connected, there are different pieces connected together. It's mutable in a way, even though it feels like I'm really hard. But so this is always shifting and changing, and more so when Pluto contacts Uranus. This is like, Pluto is like the planet that takes everything else to the gym and empowers it. It just strengthens it. So the Uranian or Promethean energy is very strong right now. Prometheus was the grandchild of Uranus, and he is kind of the embodiment of Uranus in its physical form as we see through mythology, right? So you have all these Promethean figures going through history. Some of them not so good. Some of them are, incredibly bad, like a lot of these Uranus people that we currently see hold power, like for instance Putin or Trump, or like these are Uranians, right? They sun square Uranus, Pluto, Trump is sun conjunct Uranus. You have a lot of these, like, really, Musk is sun square Uranus. You have all these Uranians. For instance, Zuckerberg has Uranus on the South Node. Sam Altman has Jupiter in Aquarius to square the nodal axis. So there's like a powerful set of people with strong Uranus driving the having these visions, right? Because it's like Uranus is classical, like, never mind stupid stuff like time and space and body. It's just pure visionary movements happening, but it's driving something through our culture that is really going too fast. And good visions can become really bad. It can be weaponized. It can be, and we saw that with the French Revolution. I can show you one example actually from my lecture, from the charts that I brought in, that is very interesting, that kind of like shows you a little bit what I'm talking about. If you can see my screen here. So this, can you see this, Jean-Jacques Rousseau?
Yeah,
Yeah.
we
All
got that.
right. So you can see Jean-Jacques Rousseau was born with a new conjunction between Pluto Uranus in 1712, right? So he was, that's basically the same as people born in 66, 67, who are now, for instance, Peter Thiel was born in that, with that Uranus Pluto conjunction in Virgo, right? And then you have the Wachowski brothers, who are now the Wachowski sisters, who made Matrix, were also born with this Pluto Uranus conjunction. And they came out with some really powerful visions with through the Matrix series about the future, right? That we now see is happening. It's kind of like, that's it. AI is basically feeding off human energy as if we were these like people living in this. I mean, Matrix is that really weird, dark, futuristic, like, vision about what happens, man and machine, and this kind of thing that we're actually currently struggling with. But if you go back to Jean-Jacques Rousseau, who was born in the 1712, he was one of the first philosophers, writers, scholars who came up with this idea that human beings are not just a meat suit. We have feelings and emotions. So he revolutionized people's understanding of what is a child. A very humanitarian guy, extremely well thought out, changed something about how we develop and encourage children to become who they are. He was a true believer in individualism and like that we are all unique and we are all valuable. So he was one of the first voices that came in. Before that, like people really wasn't more than an animal, worth more than being an animal, right? We had that kind of like, oh yeah, we can have slaves and we can have this kind of like idea that we are beyond emotion and we don't feel anything and we are just here to be exploited. A lot of upbringing was very harsh, back in the days, there were no room for this empathy. And Jean-Jacques Rousseau came in with the ideas of empathy, which in a weird way led to the French Revolution. And here we see Maximilien Robespierre. He was born with the square. You could see it circled around Jupiter, Pluto in in Sagittarius, a lot of the young people who are now, we call them Gen Zs, are born with Pluto in Sagittarius. They will be the ones who will define a lot of what's going on in our cultural expression the next 20 years, right? Especially with this Pluto going through Aquarius, and a lot of them have Uranus in Aquarius as well. So we are looking at a very potent new generation. But what Maximilien Robespierre did, because he was a fanatic, and that's the dark side of Pluto in Sagittarius generation, is that. Well, he led this very bloody revolution that eventually killed about 17,000 people through the guillotine. And the first beheading of the guillotine came with Pluto opposite 22 degrees, opposite the sun in Leo, and actually square Algol, the star in Taurus related to decapitation. This was the first one, and it was super brutal. This is, and because of the brutality, because of this intensity of what they did back then, you had total chaos. And when there's chaos, you have opportunism. And then you have a dictator coming in and taking the spot. You know, it was a good idea. Here we are. We want to create a more humane society, right? It's a good idea. Just like the smartphone was a good idea, you know, AI can be a good idea. But there's always going to be these weirdos coming in and challenging with no morals. Morals is not the realm of Uranus. Uranus is more related to vision and ideas. So it doesn't, like, from that perspective, like, for instance, you look at people like Elon Musk, which is, let me show lots of slides. I'm not going to show you the whole Elon Musk. He's a Mars on the North Node in Aquarius, and Uranus square the Sun. Uranus is down here in Libra, and the Sun is in Cancer. So here we have somebody, and we, you know, like he, this is the guy who said that empathy is a bad thing, right? Which it, yeah, it's kind of weird, right? But that's kind of like the an idea. Like, why does it? Why did he say that? You know. What is this robotic, unemotional, disassociated energy that he brings in? And that's kind of like the Promethean energy that is out of touch with the laws of biology, the laws of nature. So, like these people, the technocrats and stuff, they ensured us to, you know, like, it's a good idea, some of these things, yes, to have a society where we can connect with each other, et cetera, and so forth. But what Musk and Peter Thiel and others with him have shown us is that we can also be under surveillance constantly. We can also be easily manipulated through this connection with each other. There's like right now, 50% of the internet is basically bots, right? So it's not even human, right? So you have, and these bots are being programmed by governments to for propaganda. I think Israel just spent like $70 million for, you know, for in that's they call it the eighth frontier, I think. So they realize the potential that lies in this internet type of propaganda, right? And so it was a good idea, the whole internet thing, for sure. I mean, that's why we can connect here today, right? But then again, you have people taking these ideas and making it into something that is promoting a very negative worldview, right? Distorted. It's disassociated from the heart. It's disassociated from from empathy, from humanity. It starts out as a good idea and turns out into something difficult for Earth to handle. And we see the same within ecology. Right? You have like an introduction of something that's supposed to heal something, and you just create another problem with it. So it's kind of like a difficult thing, this progress that we constantly are going through and we can't avoid. It's what Jeffrey Wolf Green would call evolution, basically. And we tend to kind of like celebrates evolution. But the fact is that if evolution moves too quickly, if progress moves too quickly, there will always be a reaction, a contraction. And we've seen that the last couple of years. Suddenly, everybody, a lot of liberalism, you had DEI, you had trans activism, you have all these things like in the latter part of the 2010s. And then came the reaction to that, a contraction, a more conservative approach. Now you see the split and the polarization between these two extremes. And there is, of course, the answer must be somewhere in the middle, but we are constantly battling with these powers of progress. And right now, if you look at the chart right now, which is currently we go through Pluto in Aquarius and Uranus in Gemini. And the challenge with that is time is moving so quickly. Everything is happening all at once. We're all connected. We feel everything. And I think the beauty of that is that we go through these deep collective initiations together. It's like it's not just my drama now, it's everybody's drama, right? And it's very intense, very, very intense, but it's also very, very educational in terms of us understanding the connection between the subconscious and the conscious. You know, if we kind of like we become more enlightened, sort of, we learn, we expand our awareness of whatever is going on, but it's moving really quickly. And I think a lot of people will have a little bit of trouble, you know, catching up, catching our breaths. Because it's moving so quickly. And that's why I believe, you know, this is the last time where Pluto is in Aquarius, and it's in 2044. And if you try to kind of envision life in 2044, what would you see, for instance? You would see that we will live in a very technological society, but it will be considerably more interesting to see what it means to be human, actually, because of this AI constant robotics techno society we live in. We will then come back to what it means to be human. And one of my like favorite things, my happy things to think about is the Pluto polarity point for this particular journey with Pluto in Aquarius, because that's something. That's the counterculture. I when in transit, I choose to call that the counterculture. That's the formation of some sort of counterculture. Because if a machine can replace me, huh? Who am I then? And what's my contribution? Can I be replaced? So we're going to go through a time where we really have a lot of deep existential questions about our value and our worth, also seen through Chiron in Taurus, which we're going to have for the next 8 years, right? Which has a lot to do with self-worth, to just realign, like figuring out what is my gift? What is Leo is always trying to figure out what is my contribution? What is my gift? Huh? What can I do? How can I contribute to this world becoming a place that I would like it to be? Right. So I see a second renaissance, if you like. You know, we will have, there was a Jupiter Saturn conjunction in Aquarius. I think it was in 2021. And it was the first time since the 14th and 15th century that you had these Jupiter Saturn conjunction in air signs. And th that. When it happened last time, it correlated with the Renaissance, where a lot of like we came out of the dark Middle Ages, like ignorance. So suddenly we picked up old texts and literature that like wisdom that had been forgotten. And the Renaissance was a fact. You had a really, really like creative time for humanity. Coming and leading up to the Enlightenment, a lot of progress, a lot of inventions, etc., and so forth. And now we're at the second, now it's happening again, and there will be many conjunctions in the next 100 years with Saturn, Jupiter in air signs. So we're in a time of air. Pluto is in air. That was the conjunction between Jupiter and Saturn. Uranus is currently in air, even though it will only stay there for 8 years. And that's nothing. That's a blip in time. 2044 is a little bit longer. So, but we're in this age of air, of ideas, of communication, of getting together. And I always find faith in Patti Smith's words when she said, she had this beautiful speech to graduates in an art college, and she said, "You know, internet, it's still in its adolescence, but it carries the potential of world revolution. But I think we have to work out some glitches first, if you know, like it hasn't really matured yet. We don't really know how to use it yet, you know? And I think through this Pluto polarity point in Leo, where we're gonna go back to our hearts, where we're gonna learn what it really like. It's almost like, in lack of a better word, almost like the second coming of Christ, if you like, but in a Pluto in Aquarius way, because it happens in every one of us. It's not one individual. It's a whole group that gets together and decides, you know what? We're not going to go and just do the same old revenge thing. We're going to create a society that actually works, and it's based on these higher qualities of what Plato would call the true, the good, the beautiful. But what really has to do with the creation through heart, through love. What is love? How do we love? Can we forgive? Because we lived in a very harsh environment. There is no forgiveness for no one. Right? It's just slam, bam, kill. It's very vengeful. And I don't think that's going to work in the future because we see the bloodshed and it actually creates what Robespierre and his bunch of people realized. Well, they cut his head off. He got his karma, but they realized that that was actually what gave Napoleon the opportunity to take over France and make it into an empire again, seizing the power as a dictator. That's what happens. And that's not where we need to go this time around. I hope we find newer solutions. And I think with the help of internet and also actually AI, we can get there. But it needs to be balanced, it needs to be regulated, and we're still working out the glitches. That's what I think. Yeah. So that was the short version of this very long lecture.
Yeah. All right. All right. So that is very fascinating. I think we can even maybe look at a theme for today's call. Because I looked at the questions in the chat, and looking at the transits, it's very interesting that today, like right now, we are having a moon conjunct Mars. Yeah, in Cancer. And I looked at particularly at Peter's question regarding the moon's nodes going retrograde. And I've been sitting with this and contemplating, just like what this is, there is, and maybe I'll talk about that first. Maybe I'll jump into that question a little bit, because the moon in evolutionary astrology with Geoffrey Wolf Green is the memory. And this is how experiences connect with our emotions. And this creates memories. And so the north node of the moon, and also all the planets going direct. Okay, when we go direct from Aries to Pisces, okay, the direct motion of our planets counterclockwise through the zodiac is giving us forward motion, forward momentum, creating new karma. So when we're going direct, we are creating new karma, and it's new, 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 new. Then we have the retrograde motion. And the moon's nodes are always going retrograde. The precession of the equinoxes, okay, the ages are moving retrograde. And this retrograde is digesting that new karma into a learning. It's like it's allowing evolution to occur. It's almost like we evolve through remembering, reevaluating, redoing, all of this, all of the backward retrograde motion is actually how and where we evolve. So it's like when you're talking about, like, Uranus and the past, and this, this forward motion, particularly of Uranian type, people that are, very Uranus, Aquarius in the 11th house has to do with the future. So yeah, I mean, it's very like full on new, but society, humanity, collective consciousness. You has to, especially like Neptune, the collective unconscious needs to process and needs to integrate all of this newness in order for the growth and the evolution to occur. So Uranus is the great disturber. It's the lightning bolt hitting the tower. It's the new ideas. It's the future banging up against the past, And then there is this, like I say, digestion. And I hate to say it, but who was it that was just saying? Well, it was actually, well, but he said, growth comes through suffering. Now, that is a pretty, that's a big statement. We don't want to say that all growth comes through suffering, but we do want to say that all growth comes through digestion, which is reflection and contemplation. Just think of sports, sports, you're downhill skiing, okay, or you're car racing, or whenever you're like going forward, going into the future, when you're doing Mars. Is do. When you're in that forward pilot with the plane or the car or the bus or whatever, when you're going, you're just absorbing, getting stimulated, taking new stimulus in. That's not evolving. That's not growing. That is just absorbing, experiencing, and getting blasted. We have to take the phenomena, the events that happen in our lives, and we have to sit with them. We have to meditate with them. We have to digest them. We have to retrograde. We have to recall, remember, and reorganize. And that is the moon's nodes. And that, and Pluto is retrograde. I mean, you look at Uranus, Neptune, and Pluto, they're retrograde almost half the year, half the time. Chiron too, right? And so Mars, that's why I'm also talking about this, this Mars retrograde out of 2 years, Mars spends 6 months retrograde out of his 2 year, cycle. So, even Mars itself, which is that forward motion of do, even he goes retrograde. And I think that that is going to be a particularly volatile time. And that time period really goes from November 5th. Well, I mean, he goes retrograde. I'll come back to this Mars, but
Can I just add
January
something to
10th.
that?
Yeah,
Like, yeah.
January 10th to April 2nd, Mars goes retrograde.
And it's kind of interesting as well because Mars goes retrograde and we have Saturn in Aries, right? So at the same time, Aries is ruled by Mars and Saturn is going to be there a couple of years more, longer, right? So we all have this like the Mars retrograde thing is also a readjustment of reaction and impulses that you need to control a little bit more. So even though it's complicated energy, it can also offer an opportunity for a more realignment of the Martian principle. So like I'm hoping for like because it's happening in Virgo, like and it's crossing Regulus actually, the royal star, I'm hoping for some more humility in a way. Like there can be this hope that people will be like leaders and shit. You know, who's got Mars 29 degrees Leo? It's 26 degrees Leo. That's Trump.
Trump.
So he's in the middle of this retrograde stuff. And like it's a classic like thing with retrogrades and Saturn and Chiron, even. These are the classical elements that kind of like humbles us a little bit, that says, Come on, you're not God yet. You know, even if you are Promethean and you think you've got it all figured out, you're not God yet. You have to go back a little bit to realign. So it's very interesting to see these things happening at the same time, especially because that Mars is also squaring. It's going retrograde square the United States Uranus.
Right.
So that's really interesting time, huh?
Which
Can be challenging.
I use the chart with the United States Uranus on the ascendant,
You do, yeah. Okay. The Gemini rising.
which is the Gemini rising chart, and it's real kicker.
I'm gonna look at
So
that.
I'm gonna I'm I want to share my screen here with just so that we can see this, because I think that this is when things are really going to be happening. Basically, it is November 5th, November 4th, November 5th, just before, the United States elections, right? We have this, and this is going to be very powerful, right? Mars, Jupiter, South Node conjunction. Where is it? 25, 25, 25. On election day in the United States.
Conjunct Trump's Mars.
With Trump's Mars at 26. I mean, this is going to be like really very, very, and so let's get this right. Mars is forward action. Conjunct Jupiter is a lot of forward action. However, it's conjunct the south node of the moon. And that south node of the moon really has to do with, it's where the soul, holds on to all the past karma, all the past memories. So, the next year and a half with the south node of the moon moving through Leo, it is a very beautiful time for us to, to reflect on what we have created, what we have expressed, how we have expressed ourselves through all the years, right? Through all the transiting planets, your natal planets in Leo, the house that Leo rules in your chart, what have you created? What have you done with with your fire, with your creative self-expression? What, so this South Node is, it's really a time of, this is where the karma is. The South Node is definitely big karma. And and that can, how do we deal with that karma? It's like the antidote, okay, for old karma is the North Node, growing. We have to grow instead of getting stuck in what we have created, okay, in Leo. We need to go towards Aquarius. This is the North Node of the Moon. So the North Node of the Moon is like the antidote for the South Node of the Moon. It's the medicine. So, we want to move towards a collective, like, what is this doing to everybody? What's this doing to the whole planet? Not just my country or my family or my bank account, but it's not, this is like, we have to, our growth is going to be looking at the big picture. And I think that, things from the big picture are going to be coming more to the fore. So Mars goes up to, like I said, 10 degrees of Virgo. You want to look at where this is in your chart, right? Boom. Mars stations at 10 degrees, 25 minutes of Virgo on January 10th. So this is half of November, all of December, 10 days of January. It's slowing down, slowing down. Okay. And then there's going to be this time period from January 10th to April 2nd where Mars goes retrograde, right? And this then is going to be the, I don't want to say backlash. I want to say the consequences or the results or whatever has happened with the with the war in Iran and all this other all the other stuff that's going on. But Mars is going to come back. Where are we? Boom, stations again. Jupiter is still there. South Node is still there. So this is going to be, like I say, 2027 to 2032, I see it as being an extremely karmic time period, a 5 years, okay, of major adjustment. And we can say that Mars retrograde is readjustment. It's time to, so we will be going forward from now until January. Mars direct, okay? Plan it, do it, go for it, decide, set your goals or whatever you want to, get that website up, get your, build your program, blah, 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 and then then I'm going to say, from January to April. It's interesting because it's almost kind of springtime in the northern hemisphere, spring forward, okay, but Mars is going backward, guys. I think with Saturn, which I didn't put in here because I really just wanted to focus on this Mars Jupiter thing, and then I wanted to talk about this whole energy, and maybe I can, maybe I'll look at this also because. Let's look at this. We had Uranus at four, Neptune at four, and Pluto at four in July. And it was like, wow, okay, this is really something. Okay. But in no way, shape, or form is it over because we also have in July, in June. Of 26, we have Uranus at six, Neptune at six, and Pluto at six. This is a configuration where these guys are going to be fooling around together. Here they are. You see them at six, there in June, right? And they keep going. And Uranus goes up and it comes back again. In May of 28, let me move this forward a little bit. In May of 28, in May of 28, we have, well, let's go back a little farther for days here. Uranus, well, we have 10, 8, and 8. That's a 2-degree orb, right? I mean, so we're going to still have this Pluto, Neptune, Uranus going on, for that period of time. And even back to February of 29, even in February of 29, I'm going to say that's when it starts to kind of lighten up a little bit. But we still have, okay, 6, 8, and 10. Uranus goes retrograde until boom. There's, 10 degrees, 9 degrees, 7 degrees. So we're talking 26, 27, 28, and 29. We're talking 4 years, okay, where these guys, these big players, and here Chiron comes in there a little bit also, okay, right? But I just want to, point this out that Uranus is the personal unconscious, Neptune is the collective unconscious, and Pluto is the soul. And these unconscious soul forces, okay, and even Chiron, okay, I think also has very much to do with, our wounded healer, teacher. It's a very soul aspect. These four outer, I'm going to call them planets, but they have to do with beyond the ego, like our ego daily consciousness that, decides and lives in the present moment and, is all, basically wanting control. But there's no way we can, we have no control over Chiron, Uranus, Neptune, and Pluto are deep soul spiritual forces that are beyond our egoic control. So they represent nature, they represent life, they represent a need for us to adapt, to learn, to expand, and to grow in order to accommodate, in order to survive, in order to thrive, right, in life. So I really see that this is a time period where there's a lot of growth. There's a lot of, it's like there's a lot coming to us that is forcing us to really, grow. So it looks astrologically, trine and sextiles, and it's like opportunities and easy flowing. And I'm going to say, yes, this is a time of major growth, and major growth comes through digestion, reflection, contemplation, and integration. So it's not necessarily a time of, I mean, I don't know, so you can pick up on this, but I mean, yes, there's a lot of new stuff happening, but I see recession. I see maybe the AI bubble going the way of the dot-com bubble. I see, oil and energy, and I see us, really going on a backslide, like economically, politically, or it, I don't see it as a great period of major advancement happening, like in people's daily lives, like, oh yeah, we're having a good time. I don't see it as, oh yeah, we're having a good time. There may be more robots and more drones and more scientific discoveries and, more ways to kill people or, grab attention or, surveil, the population. But I think that the what this is pointing to is inner growth, soul growth, not economic,
Yeah, for sure, for
political.
sure.
You
And
know
I
what I'm
get
saying?
like the condensed lecture, like I mentioned a lot, like the AI stuff where you go into like there were recently, did you see this news about these 1200 AI agents that went rogue? There was like these AI, they started doing like shit on their own, like as if they had a willpower of their own. So we're in this time where we kind of like created some sort of new threat to humanity. Like when Pluto was at 9 degrees Leo, and 18, Uranus was 18 degrees Gemini, you had the Hiroshima bombing. And the guy who made the bomb, Oppenheimer, he was born with the Pluto-Uranus opposition. And he had like this one big, like he was suffering greatly after when he saw what he had done. And one of the things I think it's very much related to this massive progress technologically we've had the last 30 years. It's going to challenge the way our brains work. You're going to have a lot of like people who can't concentrate for more than 5 minutes at a time. Like it's kind of like the first time in history we've seen intelligence levels going down. And I always said that when they called it the smartphone, I said, it's a dumb phone. It's dumbing you down. So, but I believe like when that's why I brought in the last charts, because during the time Pluto is in Aquarius, it will go through Gemini first, like, and then it will go through Cancer, and then it will go move into Leo. And it's the same signs that it went through for the American Revolution, for the French Revolution, for it's kind of a repetition of something, an emancipation. It was an emancipatory time for humanity in many ways. But was it good? Both yes and no. You know, there was this chaos that came in the aftermath. And with AI, I think I couldn't agree more with you that that Chiron in Taurus is going to definitely question, make it a little like this year, like I said in the lecture. Well, this year we have coffee, next year we won't, because of some disaster, natural disaster happening somewhere. They how this change is happening at very high speed for the time being, you know, and then we have the takeover of bots and AI stuff for the internet, so it's squeezing out humans. So what's the point with it after a while, right? What's the point with it if we are not contributing? Who are we, you know? So we're going to see that, and that's a crisis. That's an identity crisis for each and one of us. That's a survival crisis for each and one of us. That's kind of like not an easy situation, but I agree with you. The three outer planets are not very personal. They don't care about, you know, it's like the soul. It celebrates when you go through growth. It doesn't really feel sorry for you when you're going through pain. And I call suffering an enzyme of growth, whether we like it or not. Sometimes we do. I mean, normally people won't fix their car before it's broken, right? And that's a lot of suffering involved because it's just extra stress and tension and your money and all the things. You could have checked it a little bit further before, but you didn't, because like that's, we do the same with our bodies. We don't go to the doctor when we're healthy, you know, we go when we're sick. So we kind of like, we're always a little bit like after in a way. And I think, you know, really like what we see with the outer planets is that it's an opportunity for spiritual growth. This is what, and I think that's the thing. Like, we've been living in this material world for such a long time. Materialism suddenly was the everything for our, that's why we got a job, because we could earn money. That's why we are to get up in the morning, a lot of us, to earn this money. That's why we are completely obsessed about, you know, money, because money symbolizes freedom for us, and we all need it to survive, of course. But it's that chase all the time. It's that one of the, if you look at some of the writings from like people who've done like extensive writings on capitalism and tied it into white supremacy and stuff, white supremacy culture, basically. One of the key features of white supremacy culture is haste. It's always in a fucking hurry. You got to post something. You have to be active on the social media. You have to be always on it, you know? And that's actually something that's really draining us bodily. You know, we can't, we, like, it's not relating to Gaia. It's not relating to nature. It's not relating to our bodies. And that is the systematic collapse that we're seeing. Prometheus is a systematic collapse type of thing. Uranus is that. Once you cross the bridge of awareness, you can't go back. Once you've seen it, you can't unsee it, right? So once you've learned something about your own life, you can't stick your head back in the sand and hoping it will work, because it won't. Right? So we're in this time where we have that woof, this massive awakening happening. And it's been going on for quite a while, actually. It's not like something that happened yesterday, but now it's just speeding up, because you have one systematic collapse after the other. And I can't help to laugh a little bit about the movie that was, I think it was released last year or the year before, with Leonardo DiCaprio. And the title is so fitting for the time we live in. It's called One Battle After the Other. And sometimes I feel that that's it, you know, like one battle. Where do I find the strength to move through? And that's where I find the counterculture, the power of love, sometimes also referred to as track 93.4, which is the sacred track, the secret hidden track that Harry Potter gets on to get to Hogwarts, you know, where the land of magic, right? Where we have, where we transcend the ordinary Saturnian rules of life, and we see that we are well taken care of with something. Even if the system around us is collapsing, we're not collapsing, you know? Because why? Because we align with, call it whatever you want, right? For me, it's suitable to call it God, right? But it, that's my language, right? Truth, something higher, light, love, peace, energy, cosmos. It
Yeah,
doesn't really
nature.
matter what you call it, but it's something that brings you back on track in your own life. And when you're there, your life works. And the rules of this being in this state of being is simple. It's love. Now, love is a book you have to read, right? It's not necessarily what we think love is. And that's why I'm so excited about the Pluto polarity point moving through Leo, actually, because I think there will be that, because of, you know, the intensity of our times, we have no other options but to move inwards and just Find peace and joy and happiness inside of ourselves. Come together, create beautiful energies. Be the, it's a little bit of a cliche, but be the solutions you want to see in the world, right? You be the forgiving one. You be the one walking with, that power inside of you. You be the one opening
I mean,
doors.
and that is Jupiter in Leo.
Well,
I mean, there
for
is
sure.
that growth and that opportunity to like really totally expand. And it's such a dichotomy. It's such a
It's such a
paradox in so many
dichotomy.
ways where like things are going to be like so gnarly. And yet at the same time, it is time for us to be inwardly. Like the mantra for this week, find this nirvana within ourselves.
Exactly.
It's like wow. So it's going to be yeah, it's going to be very, very amazing.
Very intense because we go through like what we call late stage capitalism and quite a bit of systematic collapse also in nature, right? And it's not an easy time to find peace and love and happiness and harmony. It's not like we can spiritually bypass a lot of the emotions that comes in the aftermath of us seeing such chaos. We have to take that into consideration as well.
And I think it is the culmination of the patriarchy, man. I mean,
Exactly.
this is, this has been building, building till we now have, these, well, a trillionaire
A
and
trillion. It was only a
billionaires.
trillionaire for a very short time.
And these, but just these people with such a concentration of power in the hands of so few people. It's like it's gone from the masses and the middle class to the elite, which is like so Aquarius. And it has, this is going to create. It's almost like a catalyst, I think, right?
Yeah, for sure.
To bump us up to the next level where this is not working. I don't exactly know exactly how it's what it's going to look like, but
No,
it's
that's it.
yeah, it's
It's, I
really
think it's
powerful.
we're still figuring it out, and there's some very powerful new visionaries coming through this Gen Z trend. They're going through Uranus opposite their Pluto for the time being. And I think in that, in the next type of 10 years, we're going to see some of them really moving into, power positions within society because they're pretty quick to get there. And Mozart was born with Pluto in Sagittarius. He was like 6 when he wrote his first symphony. So, I mean, we have a powerful, like Greta Thunberg, for instance, she was 14. She's a Pluto in Sagittarius. So they come really quickly to, they're like very intuitive individuals. So we're going to see, there is no quick solution to this one. It's a very complicated, systematic problem we're faced with because it feels completely impossible, right? How do we fix this? But one thing I can say for sure with this Mars retrograde that you got me thinking, there's a lot of the active point is 26 degrees Leo. I mean, Netanyahu got his Mars 26 Leo, Trump's got his Mars 26 Leo. Putin's got his Mars 26 Sagittarius. You got this guy, this Ukrainian, sorry, my name fell out, but he's got 26
Zelensky.
Zelensky, 26 Leo. So it's kind of a very hot spot for the leaders of the current world situations. Like they will go through this retrograde in a way that we. Like, I think that's going to be pretty interesting, looking at it for the elections that coming up, the midterms in Israel, there's like all these things. These things affect us more than we think. Psychologically, they've been causing so much pain for humanity. They've been causing so much split between us. It's been such a challenging time to have these wars that involves so many nations and causes so much quarreling and fighting for us all the time. And this kind of, I think, like we see now that the general public opinion is shifting a little bit, right, to a more like, so you find some of the more like one of the systematic kind of changes we would have to see in order for democracy to survive is the lobbying. Right, the oil lobbies, the AIPAC, the all kinds of lobby activity that is kind of like basically just ensuring that the power stays with the wealthy, the elite. And we are seeing slowly, slowly in a country that thinks social democracy is communism, we are seeing some interesting new leaders coming through, like Mamdani, and there's this other guy as well. Like I'm seeing some glimpse of light and hope in all of this. Like we are
Zach
slowly
Bush
moving.
running for president.
Who is he? Enlightened.
Oh, Zach Bush. Are you, yeah, you should. I'll
Good guy,
send you.
bad guy.
I'll send you. He's a. I mean,
Good guy.
yeah, he's a good guy. He's
I never
a.
thought anyone with the surname of Bush could be anything but a little bit stupid. I must miss. There you go.
Oh,
You know, you
God.
should never assume anything.
Yeah. So, I think what I want to do at this point, I mean, Sol and I have talked about a lot. We brought up, a lot to talk about, and it's an all-school chat. I want to open it up, to anybody else. We can take, up to 10 or something, before we scoot over to the Telegram chat and answer the questions that are on there. But if you have comments or questions or anything that we talked about, brought up anything for you, yeah, let's go for it. DB, you're the first up. How's it going, man?
It's great. Like you, I'm moving rocks around. Okay, I think this is fundamental and absolutely crucial to our understanding of the evolution of what we're going to see over the next few years, but it hasn't been mentioned yet, and it's not really in the media, and that is the energy revolution. We're talking about going backwards to Nikola Tesla. We're talking about free energy. We're talking about the capture of plasma. And you
Oh
call
God,
the power.
owie. Oh my poor knees. Which
Hello,
make me.
Sharon, could you mute yourself?
Oh, sorry.
So, Kaipacha, you refer to Aquarius as outer space, not air. And part of this revolution is the understanding that outer space is not a vacuum. Outer space is a vibrant potential of plasma electric connectiveness. And it's directly related to the Aquarian glyph and also the image of the water bearer, where a human being has the potential to collect this energy, because here on Earth, water is the closest thing we have to the representation of plasma in outer space. So I would just like to introduce that idea and keep your ears open for any technology, any, like, this is a deep secret. And those that want to keep it secret are working very hard to do so. By eliminating the scientists, by and can you imagine the change? Can you imagine the revolution? Because this is where the constraints right now for the progress of our current culture exists. These AI, power generating stations that must turn nuclear now in order to maintain. So, if there was a revolution where we could draw power from the very substance that we are all created from, then the genie's out of the bottle, man. It is an explosion, of
I'm
potential.
just going to be my own little powerhouse.
Yes.
I can charge people for getting electricity from me. That's good. Monthly subscription.
Dial it in. Anyway,
My plug.
I think that's part of this Aquarian revolution, and
Yeah.
it's baked right into, like I say, the glyph with the parallel resonant curves.
Yeah.
It is literally the symbol of plasma and energy collection. Anyway, that's it.
Fantastic.
Thank
Thanks,
you.
DV. I got to keep my eye on that. I was not aware of this revolution even happening. So, yeah, thanks for
They're
that.
going to clean up the oceans too, Kaipacha. They're already doing it. The plastic revolution. I mean, a lot of stuff is coming from Africa. Africa is the place to look at. You know, there's so much initiative and powerful creativity coming from Africa. Like young people really like have people who have never been able to participate in our so-called, you know, cultures because of this systematic racist model that everything is built on, right? It's slowly changing. This erosion, of course, it happens slowly, but it is there. And I pay attention to a lot of what goes on in the underground, and particularly Africa is very deep in my heart because I kind of like I feel very drawn to everything African. And I've paid attention to culture, art, fashion, anything that comes, inventions that comes out of Africa. Really, there was this guy, you know, like in Japan, Asia as well, because they live together in such tight areas. Or in Africa, they have to deal with so much garbage and pollution, right? So they figure out ways to deal with that. So it's really optimistic. That's making me optimistic, you know. And that fusion fission thing or the plasma thing you mentioned, DB, is that, you know, like I think, you know, what we see is very dark kind of systems on Earth holding the whole petrol industry, you know, together. That's not ready to change yet. And we're seeing now slowly they're moving over to other alternative sources, but this is a powerful lobby. It's not, they're not just gonna give up their money like that.
No, the patent offices have been stopping patents from scientists who've come up with Tesla. You know, there's been a lot out there that is just they silence as much as they can, but they can't stop a tidal wave of innovation. I'm going to share my screen and we'll look at some of these questions that are up here on Telegram and go for it, because I didn't see any other hands go up. DB was our only contributor there. So Patrick Blaza asks, what's a good way to build clientele without selling out to the social media machine? Chris actually came right back with an answer with some suggestions. Most importantly, I feel, is to give the best reading you can that has great value for someone. Hone your skills continuously to do this. Word of mouth goes a long way. Use and populate, right? Physically attend community gatherings of like interests and share what you do in conversations. Hand over business cards, post in your community. Teach a class, nurture your leads in a personal way, and make it easy to book with you, and personally email past clients every so often to check in and to continue client relationships. I can only underline everything that Chris said. And I even agree with like almost the order that he puts them in, because I really do feel that word of mouth, it results from you changing people's lives, and they talk about you, right? And it is important. It's almost like now a website or an Instagram account is more like a business card than anything else. It's just like, okay, when people want to find out something about you or get your contact information, they'll go to, contact you through the through your social media presence. And the other thing is, teaching classes. I know that's just like such good practice in bringing things from theoretical into, from conceptual to communicating those. It helps so much, and of course, word of mouth goes that way, a long way also. More than that, anybody, you are able to unmute yourself. Please, if you'd like to speak, you can unmute yourself and say a few words. Anybody else got anything else in answer to Patrick's question?
I think there's an art if there's other channels, so like learning how to write or, write about the astrology and trying to get published, or even I think doing like interviews or working with other astrologers can be a real nice opener.
Yeah. So, do you think like going to astro conferences and conventions or something? Do you think that does anything, or
With
just
that,
kind of
like
talking to the choir?
I've always been a little bit like, oh, these conventions and blah blah blah, like a little double when it comes to these big gatherings. But I see how many really flourishes when they get here. There's something about the connecting with the people, and connecting with and having conversations and getting your face out there. And just, I mean, it's not for everyone. You have to be social and happy meeting people and capable of connecting with people you don't know. So it might not be for the most introverted types, so they might find it a little overwhelming. But if you're pretty extroverted and having fun and liking to come out and have fun, it's a great place to meet people and to get your business out there. So, but I think the most important thing, what Chris suggests here, is that the give the best reading possible, and word of mouth, but you have to be willing to stick your head out a little bit in order for people have to see you. You have to kind of like understand that who you are. So Patrick, you said that you did that, and did it work for you?
I've done
I mean,
it.
huh?
Yeah. I've read people for free here and
Yeah.
there. It's cool. Yeah.
It's cool, yeah. Yeah, but
Yeah,
you
that's
want to
definitely
get to the
me.
point where you can kind of charge people for the reading.
Yeah, I need to get to that point.
Yeah, but
Yeah.
that's something you just do, right? You just like, where do you, th where's the current, like, who knows what you're doing? How do they know? Do you have a website?
I do.
Yeah, that's good. And but you don't want to do the social media thing, which, why? Was it, is it too hectic? Do you think you have to kind of like do too much in order to be seen?
I don't know. I have very low motivation to create it for some reason. I have no idea. I think it just sucks my energy. But I mean, I do have a Instagram, and I do have
Hmm.
some things. I have my posters up there, et cetera. But I haven't
Yeah,
really.
yeah. And where do you live, by the way?
In Berlin.
In Berlin, yeah. Okay, so you live in Berlin. Okay, so you're in Berlin. Okay, right. Well, I would j then. Yeah, I mean, it's about getting connected with people who are interested in this. I mean, it's kind of. I mean, this is what she says. Physically attend community gatherings. Are there many of those, or do you feel like it's not enough, or?
No, I try actually to. I'm trying to start some things, but it's just it. I don't seem to like get any, or maybe I just,
Traction.
yeah. There's no traction, and I don't know. I'm not. I feel kind of like that. I need to do it somewhere else because maybe it's
I
not.
mean, I gotta say, it is. It's very self-promoting is really difficult for a lot of people because you're new at something, but you've got to have confidence in your abilities in order to, rattle your own, blow your horn. And how do you blow your horn about something that you're new at? So you're kind of in a, it's a tough spot. And like I've said before, I got over that just by psychic fairs. And putting a
Psychic
booth
fairs,
up
yeah.
at psychic fairs and charging 20 euros for 20 minutes and just, whipping out, just what the first things that come to mind and da, 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 so that you get over your own inhibitions around, talking astrology to strangers.
Yeah,
And,
I definitely
and
don't have, I don't have that problem. It's just a matter of like figuring out where to start and just doing it, because I have the issue of like analysis paralysis, and then yeah, plus just
So
working out.
that can also be it, Patrick. You just got to kick your own butt, man.
Exactly.
Semrin. Semrin's got her hand up.
Yeah, I just wanted to share something to because, for example, I was asked recently to lecture about the nodes because in a lot of spiritual communities, the focus is right now pretty much to redirect to the North Node, because that's like an indicator for many, not just astrology, but for many spiritual communities, that they find their true nor nodes, true North Node. So, and this lecture helped me a lot to, gain visibility, let's say. And then I was asked to do a second lecture. And for the second lecture, I created a YouTube video just about how to create a birth chart. And this I published on YouTube, and this video had so many views, only how to create a birth chart. We can just start with simple things. Doing that, and then really, if we are interested in, publishing either on YouTube or on Instagram, the nodes are very popular at the moment in the spiritual community. So just talk about the nodes and talk about, the polarities of the nodes, and so the people understand what is the node, and then people will see that, and then they want to go deeper into it, and then they want to understand where are my nodes in my chart. So you create, like, yeah, the video how to create a birth chart and stuff like this. Very simple things. And then you have to choose your media, if it's YouTube, if it's Instagram, if it's Facebook, whatever. Well, like this, we can gain visibility already. Or if we have, communities in our surrounding, just announce a lecture about the nodes, and people will come, because everybody is looking for a direction at the moment. And what better to lecture about if not the nodes?
Yeah, great. Thank you.
You're
Thank
welcome.
you. All right, what else we got here? Han is saying hello from Brittany in France. And he's in the pull of Chiron, going through Taurus, and seeing a lot of Chiron and Venus activity going on. The thing, though, here is that I asked him to post his chart, and he came back saying that it was his daughter's chart that he was talking about. And so he did, but he does post his chart. And he's curious about the patterns and shapes, their rulers and direction orientation, as there are many in my chart, and many of these patterns coming up in the week ahead, inclusive of Chiron. So I'm curious. Han, are you on the call?
Yes, I'm here. It's just I didn't want to put like my full name on
Oh, okay.
Telegram, because people, weird people, were sending me messages.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
No, I'm sorry about that.
That's all right. It's just weird. That's all. So I just put that Han instead of Hannah.
Okay. So there we have it. Yeah. And could you be a little more so I take it you're a new paradigmer? Are you new to
Oh yeah,
astrology?
yes,
And
I'm a
this
new
is
paradigm. It's just I've been kind
okay.
of dabbling in astrology. My mum was really into astrology, and then I don't know, I've got into it, and I've been following paleo reports for the last 15 years, and then I just suddenly thought, oh, I want to know more about this. I want to go a bit deeper.
Okay. Yeah. So there's a, I'm sure there's a bunch of new paradigmers on the call, and it's great to have, Hannah, come on and, ask, some basic, things around the patterns, right? I mean, and you've got a lot of patterns. you could see all those lines in there, and and all this. You were asking about Chiron specifically. Chiron has just gone into Taurus. It's going to retrograde back into Aries. When, I wrote this down in preparation here, but
It's in September. It's somewhere late September. So it's pretty soon.
It's retrograde now, and then it goes back to 26 degrees of Aries. by January of 27. And then it goes back and goes up by August of 27. It gets up to 4 degrees 38 minutes of Taurus. So it's going very slowly right back and forth across this this cusp. And of course, at 51, you have your Chiron return. So, Hannah, we kind of know a little bit of how old you are already, because we can see that you are approaching your Chiron return here in the next like 3 years or so. So, but yeah, and we could talk about your Chiron. We can talk about Chiron in Taurus maybe a little bit. We can see that you have Chiron opposite Uranus. And that is true for most of the people on the planet. Chiron was opposite Uranus for 42 years. So this is a big one, and it's very interesting that we're dealing with Aquarius, Uranus, Pluto, North Node in Aquarius. I mean, there's a lot of Promethean energy, and it's as all these people that were born with Chiron opposite Uranus now, it's really time to heal, right? Our wounds and our relationship to this Uranus energy, this Promethean energy, and it can be very healing. So this is, this is very powerful. I think that we can just let's just talk about that for a little bit. We can see that in your personal chart, it's in the sixth house of health and healing. Very powerful. It's not that far off of your descendant. Sextile the moon, trine Mars and Saturn, and that looks like what? An in conjunct to Pluto? Yeah. So, is that what you would like to know a little bit more about today, Hannah? Because we could spend the rest of the call and many days talking about your chart.
You know, the way that I also just to shoot in something here, Hannah, you were thinking
Yes.
about the T square between Pluto, no, the Pluto Venus Chiron
I was
opposition,
just
because
curious about the it looks like the kite shape, the meaning of the kite shape, because there's a kite shape coming up again this week. And I was just curious about what does that mean when, and what rules that kite shape? What direction is the kite going in? Is it going down towards Pisces or is it going up towards Virgo? Do they have a shape and a directional kind of pull? That's what I was curious about.
In the natal chart, you mean?
I'm an artist, so I'm just looking at it like an artist,
Yeah,
saying,
like what? Yeah, like more.
is there a pull towards one way or a pull towards the other way, or is there a
The I
driving
certainly see
force
that
behind
you have,
it?
so I see it that you have the tail of the kite. The moon is the
Okay,
tail
that's what
of
I'm
your
curious
kite,
about, yeah.
right? Yeah. And Mars, Saturn, and the midheaven is the top of the kite. And
Right,
so
okay.
it is going, this Mars and Saturn, I see as the pole, as the head, and the trine, the grand trine of, Uranus and Mercury are the wings of the kite.
Okay.
And they are supporting this the forward motion of
Okay.
the top of the kite, and
Okay.
the tail of the kite is like the effects or the results or what happens on Earth or what you see. So it's, so it's all kind of getting funneled down through through the tail, but it's going towards the top. That's just like a very, very simple, quick,
Okay.
way of that I just put together now.
Okay. And where in the coursework can we find explanations to these types of
There's
shapes?
planetary patterns. It's called
Oh, it's
planetary
planetary
patterns.
patterns. Okay.
Yeah. And there's a class on it in the, is it Cosmonauts? Yeah.
No.
The end of the
Okay.
Cosmonauts, we go into there's a whole class on it and a workbook and everything like that. I will say that you can, at this point, Let me bring us over to the classroom home. And I was looking at this. These are the PDF guides, right? These are very helpful. And even some of the advanced guides are not really that advanced. I mean, here's the chart according to Kaipacha. I mean, I wouldn't call this advanced. Okay. I mean, there's a few things in here, orientations in a chart. I would not really call this advanced. So you feel free, even if you're a new paradigmer, to play around a little bit with these. But one of the things that I would look at in regards to the kite is the focal planets. The
Okay.
moon is definitely a focal planet of that kite. I think we could all agree, right? And we can look at, you can go through these different focal planets. I think that that is that that can be really a good place for you to get a little more. But then you just go into your into the library and look under all the different, I mean, yeah.
Okay, thank
A
you.
anybody else have anything to say on that kite before I maybe
Well, the
ask you?
kite is also the can I see the chart again? You are
Yeah.
just so that I don't say anything that I because I just thought it's not just sextiles and trines, there's a grand square there as well. So it's kind of a there's it brings in a what we call a beautiful tension in a way. It sort of fuels we could call it creative tension that fuels the whole thing. And I feel like that Saturn Mars on the top of your chart is really helping you to kind of materialize your visions into this world through disciplined action, discipline and work, right? So it's that meticulous detail orientation that you have in your art and in your expression that kind of fuels everything into that. It feels like everything goes into that. But I think you might also occasionally work a little bit too hard, like you or struggle with not doing the things you should be doing when you should be doing it. Like there's like this polarity between Pisces and Virgo in your chart, and Virgo is like pretty workaholic, whereas Pisces can be very like timelessness. So there's like this kind of like figuring out the balance with all this. And with Chiron coming into your return point pretty soon, I think a lot of these themes that was related to self-worth, to value, to feeling worthy, to enjoying life as well is coming in as a super like strong healing for you. Like you will figure out to have better boundaries between what people expect from you, what you need to perform, how hard you work, when you push yourself too hard, etc. and so forth, and come back more to to an inner dialogue where you kind of ask yourself, is this sustainable? Am I living a life that's sustainable? Am I efficient enough? Am I wasting a lot of time going in circles? All these things, you know, just trying to, when you work, and when you relax, you relax. There's like, you have that both that balance between what we call work-life balance. Right. And then there's some relationship issues with that Venus Neptune opposition as well that can come in and challenge that work-life balance or make it hard for you to just do things for yourself or be completely like us, you know, in that Chiron in Taurus, which is way more interested in, you know, just if and savoring it in a way. So there's a
It's
huge
kind of
healing
like
coming in for you with this Chiron.
you've been all over the galaxy for many lifetimes, and you are so scattered all over the place, and you see
Thank
everything
you.
and feel everything, and get it. And this is a lifetime. It's like herding cats. This Mars Saturn is like, you know what? Pull your shit together. Grab all this stuff that you've had from like, all, and it's time to like stuff it all into a bag or something, and like funnel it, and it's just like, wow. So it can be Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of
Yeah.
work involved, but it'll of course that's very, very beautiful, powerful, soul intention. Yeah.
I'm thinking about writing a book at the moment. I'm a teacher and I spend all day talking and helping people and I just feel like writing a book or something. That's why I don't know what I'm going to do.
No, but
But
that's,
yeah.
I think that's an expression of wanting to honor yourself and your talents more, helping people, being involved in other people, that's nice too. But if it's too much of that and you get too little time for yourself, right? Or too little time for the things that you're really passionate about, you're going to feel it some way, like a pull, a longing to something else, because there's an urge for balance and freedom, not least but not last freedom. Just to have a bit more freedom.
Thank you. Well, thank you. I just really thought it was really interesting what's moving with Chiron, because when you talked about Uranus the other day, you talked about like the third eye, and I suddenly thought that resonates with third cycle in the trialectic levels of consciousness. And I just thought, I think I'm in my third cycle. Maybe lots of people on this course are in their third cycle. We all want to do something that's in service of, life and evolution, and how can we share these ideas and, help people wake up and stuff. So yeah, it kind of really spoke to me. Anyway,
Well,
thank
you're
you.
on track, babe, being
Yeah.
the teacher with the North Node in the ninth house and Jupiter in the ninth house. Teach away.
Yeah, okay. Thank you. Thank you both.
Yep, if you want to learn something, teach it. So, all right.
Absolutely.
Well,
Yeah.
let's go back here to our So then Peter asked about the moon's nodes, retrograding, going clockwise, and how so much of our, all of the phases and the aspects, we're always going, new moon to first quarter to opposition to third quarter, the balsa, all the phase, the whole phasal relationships, it's all about starting in Aries and going around to Pisces. And I mean, I kind of started off, Peter, addressing that, your question.
I
Did you?
also was interested in, like, we went through from the age of Pisces, now the age of Aquarius, and then I guess the age of Capricorn next. I mean, that kind of larger movement.
Right.
That's all I was kind of asking about. I think because you talk about the Aries to Jupiter to Gemini, that kind of evolutionary growth. Yeah.
Yeah, right. I mean, that's and so there is this, yeah, that I mean, I'm in the same boat as you. I have a lot of questions about it, the procession that we're going from the age of Pisces to the age of Aquarius, instead of, progressing forward from the age of Aquarius into this, age of Pisces. And all I can say is I go back to what Geoffrey Wolf Green said, about the retrograde motions and about the moon's nodes and the whole thing about retrograde. And all I can say is, especially even like with the changing of the ages, it's almost like we are reviewing what happened 26,000 years ago in the last age of Aquarius. Like, I mean, if I mean, we can't really comprehend, I don't think, on an ego level, just what that, what these huge, cycles of
Time, yeah.
evolution and time are all about. But there is something, I would say that, and we can even look at, maybe go back to that, during the age of Leo, right? Because, now, if we're moving into this age of Aquarius, we really want to be looking at the axis, these at six different axes instead of just, looking at the 12 signs when we deal with these evolutionary, parts of the chart. So, do you have any, thing to add about this retrograding of the precession and the moon's nodes, why they go retrograde?
Yeah, well, they will go retrograde. Well, I haven't questioned it, to be quite honest. I feel it's just a natural thing. Some, like, look at Uranus. It's tilted on the north and south node and kind of rolls around and around, instead of, we're all tilted like this, Uranus is tilted like that. There are all these things moving backward, forward. It doesn't really matter. But this is within the wheel of time. And I think you actually said it to begin with, Kaipacha. The wheel of time is very much these larger wheels of cultural expressions that we go through and going backwards to go forwards, right? It makes sense. I mean, it's just relative from where you are at that it's going backwards, right? So there is one concept though in esoteric astrology that I've found to be slightly touching upon it if you want to look at something esoteric, and it's that the changing of the crosses. They have something like that where they speak about going backwards through the crosses in order to reach enlightenment. But I think you kind of said it, Kaipacha. It feels more like an understanding in order to, we have to remember times before us in order to move forward. And also re remembering is also healing sometimes, like something's lost, we have to, and the nodes are very much about that. It's a remembering experience, and you remember something, and you remember something, and the past is coming back so that you can move forward. So it's kind of always about this remembering in one way or another in order to heal it, in order to let it go, until there's nothing more to heal and nothing more to let go. And in that case, you're beyond the wheel of time. There is no duality anymore. Then you are what we call enlightened, and there's no need to work anymore on earthly planes, which is defined by space and time. Momentum, the distance between everything. Eventually, there is no distance between everything. So that's kind of like the more mystical approach to it all. Rachel, did you want to say something about the crosses?
And you receive an honorary certificate from the New Paradigm School of Astrology.
I didn't necessarily want to say something about the crosses, but about how even, when we're looking at a chart and looking at how the time moves, the ascendant moves every 2 hours and it doesn't push the planets forward and like the way that we read the chart, it actually pushes them back. And so it has this diurnal kind of element to it where I think it's a little, in one way, it's a little bit like the yin and yang, and you have this spot that balances that out. But in our chart that we're using, there are elements that are kind of sculpting together. But I love both of your responses in terms of this big picture of it.
That is true. With the, I mean, every morning the sun rises and all the planets are moving actually clockwise all day long. if you do your astro clock or whatever and you watch, they're all going, clockwise. It's pretty trippy.
And it's something that's so confusing when we first start learning astrology, but then we totally forget about it in a way. Like it sits in the back. That's cool.
Yeah. With your progress chart, you see it.
Totally.
That's yeah, get into the follow that progress chart and you'll get a better handle on it too, Peter. All right, we got another Jess. Just found your correct birth time. Oh my God. That can be a real shocker. The chart has changed completely. So have you, my dear. Oh my God. So she wants to know more about the descendant ascendant line, the horizon, the horizontal, ascendant descendant axis, right? And how anything transiting that axis may be amplified. So I, besides, I have your, we can look at your chart. But I also just wanted to share with you the research of Michel Gogolin, who was a statistician who set out to disprove astrology and all of its bunk. And, uh-oh, what did I do with that? And so he gathered all kinds of statistics. And he ended up proving astrology more than disproving it. And I have this little, so he gathered, the charts of sportsmen, and he looked at where their Mars was, and politicians, and looked where their Jupiter was or whatever. And he came up with, this is the actual graph that shows it's not exactly. So this is the 12th house is actually the strongest placement of a planet in a birth chart. And the next is the ninth house. So you can see that these points are relatively close to the angles, right? When you're looking at the ascendant descendant, so particularly, I think you have Uranus, over here, or Hana had, Uranus here with Chiron over here. So we know Uranus and Chiron are also extremely powerfully placed within the horoscope. But, astrologers mostly say that if you have planets on the angles of the chart, okay, they are. They are more powerfully placed, more potent. Yes. And so you with your new birth time, I'm assuming that what you're saying here is that it put Mars on your descendant, Neptune and Uranus on your ascendant, with Venus not that far away. Okay, but you're wanting to know more about the ascendant descendant axis. And I mean, I call that kind of like the relationship axis. This is the eastern point, which is more I, and the west is you, they, them. That we experience it that way anyway. And what I always suggest to people is that, we have a tendency to project planets in the seventh and the eighth house onto other people. And it's good for us to remember that they are us. You are actually Mars in Cancer. It's not people you go out with or partners that you're attracted to. Okay. You are Mars in Cancer. So, and you are Chiron in Leo. Whereas you may experience this more through partnership and relationship. And other people attracting wounded partners, or sensitive emotional partners, or going through it. Yeah, but they are actually very reflections of a very deep inner part of yourself. And the ascendant, I always say planets in the first house. I am Venus, and I am Saturn. And I also say you're kind of in the school of your rising sign. In some ways, if you got a planet conjunct the rising sign, you are in the school of Neptune in Capricorn. You are in the school of Neptune, of Uranus in Capricorn. And you are, the more you are becoming, this life is about becoming more and more aware of Uranian, Neptunian forces in the universe. So,
Answering Christina's question about she's having a trouble figuring out something, so I was deep in some settings. Yes,
oh, I'm
about
sorry.
the Gogolin zones. That's very interesting. Look at that Pluto Mercury on the midheaven now. So it's in the strongest Gogolin zone together with Uranus and Neptune in the 12th house near the ascendant and the
She's out
Capricorn
there.
rising. Huh?
She's definitely out there. just as
Yeah,
alchemy.
but that's super mystical. It's kind of like the mystic. It's kind of like, and thankfully, it's been grounded by this powerful Capricorn ascendant. Trust me, I'm so glad I have Capricorn rising. Otherwise, I'll be some weirdos floating around in space, you know? It's grounding me into life. And it is a very challenging ascendant in that regard. Saturn's always demanding something from you, the ruler Saturn. And it's in her first house in Aquarius, and it's demanding structure and regulation and discipline and leadership, actually. It's requiring some sort of leadership. So it's challenging a kind of evolution to those aspects of this chart that is way beyond time and space, and that can feel a little like that Mars. Is it retrograde? Mars retrograde in Cancer. It's kind of very emotional. It's very in the moment, etc. and so forth. And here comes the ascendant and going, well, take a step back, realign again. What is this really about? It's kind of maturing the whole personality in order for energy not to be wasted. Battles that are not worth fighting won't be fought. Battles that are worth fighting will be fought, etc. and so forth. So it's definitely, you know, that Capricorn rising is that big admiral. It's the admiral coming and showing up and saying, I think we got to do this, that, and the other, and don't focus on those things, but focus over here instead because that's important. And it's gathering all this mystical, visionary, spiritual energy that you see in this chart and grounding it powerfully. Learning how to really regulate and finding again what's very important for mastery, a feeling of mastery, balance. You know, it's that feeling. So it's a very potent chart because there's plenty of dichotomies inside this chart. There's a full moon. It's on the nodal axis. You're born under an eclipse, so it's a very full moony lunar chart, right?
Yeah,
And
baby.
There's a lot of there's a high potential for extremities, like something goes to the extremes, right? Mars retrograde is known to have only two gears. It's either full on or nothing at all. So, and then with this Uranus Neptune in the 12th house, which can have an alternative relationship to time in general, it's like, oh, it's already 5 p.m. on a Tuesday. I didn't think so. I thought it was like 12 Monday. You know, like it's kind of like it can fall out of chronological time occasionally. So that helps so much. There is so much power to be found in activating that ascendant, working on active empowering that ascendant, empowering your Saturn and understanding this Saturn in Aquarius, that through commitment you actually get a lot of freedom. It's through committing to something you create freedom. So that's gonna probably heal some of the fears around losing freedom if you commit to something very strongly.
Beautiful. Jess, you're on the call. Did you want to share any more or ask any more or get more specific? Or was there, she also talked about transits to those, to those angles too.
Yeah, 'cause just before my chart before my eclipse axis was near the ascendant, so I was like, oh, every time something goes over, that's going to be huge. But now it's changed, and yeah, I guess anytime anything's near that line, it's just going to make a big domino effect, really, isn't it? Affecting multiple planets and energies all in a big conglob, you know, rather than a singular clear energy to read, it would be like a mix. Would you say that is correct?
That's a big change. I'm envisioning you had the sun on the ascendant.
So
Wow.
Sag rising. Very different, very different energy.
Yeah, girl. Oh my God. Yeah. Well, that's really something to watch. You're having a Mars return right now. On this call, right? Moon Mars is on your Mars, and it's rising. So it is really something to watch. Yeah, watch those transits, over that, over that, and you can go back, of course, through your biography and look back, when the last time was, Saturn and Capricorn. And I mean, there was that whole 2020, 2019, Jupiter Saturn, on your ascendant. I mean, kaplooey, right? That was in late Capricorn. So There's a lot that you can really see, but I would say that your chart gets lit up with transits, both to the nodes and that eclipse that you were, that soul brought up, and you'll also get major triggers around, the 23 degrees, Cancer Capricorn, well, cardinal in general. Yeah,
Cool,
that's
thanks.
Yeah, you betcha. I mean, we could go way into that chart, but we're gonna see here. Cleo's got unexpected visitors. Okay. How do you view the use of AI when studying astrology? The use of AI.
Well,
Okay.
personally, I haven't used AI to study astrology because I studied astrology before AI, right? And what we need to take into consideration with AI is that if you ask ChatGPT or any other AI kind of like thing, I don't know what to call it, a question about astrology, it might not always be correct. You know, you can't rely on these things 100%. I've heard lots of people complaining about, you know, misinformation through AI. Especially in the field of astrology, because it basically sucks up everything that's on the internet and spits it out again to you. So it's kind of like just vacuum cleaning the internet for information about astrology. So it has absolutely no critical sense. So I would personally, if I'm studying astrology, try to avoid it using it as much as possible. I wouldn't ask it for charts. I wouldn't ask it for birth times. I would go and check on the internet for myself and find sources that are reliable, if that's what you mean, Hege.
I found
Hege,
that
you think?
there can be some good stuff that it's got when it comes to like a general question about something, but definitely I've calculated charts wrong. So
Yeah, it does.
to
I'm aware.
assume that you have a time, date, and place of birth, and then you ask it a question about that chart, that's where you really have to be careful because, if it's looking at the wrong chart, so you would for sure want to, have it, give you the chart and verify that it's interpreting the right chart, with another astro.com or AstroSeek or, your own self. But, make sure that, you're talking about the same chart before you start, because it'll just say, Mars is in Virgo when actually Mars was in Gemini. And it'll go on with this whole big thing. And you're like, wait a minute, my Mars is in Gemini. So you got to be like, you got to be, at this stage of the game, AI is still in its infancy. It's still learning. And it's just really not to that point yet. I think in the future, I'm not gonna project a whole negative thing on it because there is some it does gather like Sol said, what it's doing right now is it's just gathering, everything out there on the internet, okay, to and presenting you with it. So this is the other thing, is the prompt and the question. What you can do whenever, and this is not just for astrology, this is with AI in general. You put as many qualifiers on your question, according to evolutionary astrology, dot, 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 right? And instead of it going out and getting everything, it's going to narrow its search to evolutionary astrology. You at least want to do that. I mean, you could just do new paradigm astrology.
Yeah,
But,
there was this one artist who said this about AI, and I think it's our responsibility to be aware of this because we are protecting something that is precious and sacred to humanity. We can't just be lazy about it. We can't build reliance on AI if we want to move forward. And he said that what you miss out of using AI too much is that you miss out of the creative process. And I've spent so many time digging out information, looking for shit in books, going through, figuring out stuff, Googling something, stumbling over some person who had that chart, pulling up that chart, getting involved in some other direction. I've been learning through finding things for myself. This is, I've been learning through the creative process of looking for information. I've been learning a lot. Whereas AI just coughs it up and says, well, here it is, there you go, ready served. It's like a microwave meal compared to a Michelin star, like deliciousness, something you fucking you can enjoy, you savor it, you don't just gulp it in, you just microwave meal, you burn your tongue and it doesn't taste anything. That's my, you can understand that I'm not very fond of AI, huh? You
Yeah, we
say.
got there. I hear you, but I just want to say something about my question. It's more because while teaching something, so that was like actually was is it like when teaching, is it like bad, do not use it? Because what I've done with my own chart is like I can go into like picture of my chart, go into ChatGPT and say, I want to study my Saturn in blah blah blah, seventh house, and then of course, what's coming up is the view of my, like, of the Saturn. So it's my, but it's like, is it okay to do it that way, or is it like,
I mean, I
no,
can be an
I.
AI purist. You know, I can be a little bit of a purist when it comes to AI, right? Because when we were young, you know, we had to go and actually
I'm
check
older than
in
you,
books
though.
to find placements and shit. You know, so, but the thing is that, you know, or we had to consult an astrologer for that matter, right?
Yes,
Because
of
it's kind of like, I
course,
do
but
understand why people would want to do that, but I have a friend, she uses it extensively, and she asks AI about everything. And I'm like, are you okay? You know, so it's kind of like, is that good? In order, it's just a gathering, it's a library, it's gathering all the information. Let's say Saturn in Pisces in the second house square, Uranus something, something. It's not going to be something bad or not good or bad about that.
So
It's that's
it's
just
not like
you.
because I'm not,
It's just
yeah. It
you,
was
that's
more
you
like because I
accessing a
used it as
library,
fairy tales.
basically. No, it's
Yeah,
nothing
I
wrong
use
about
it like
that.
fairy tales sometimes just to, but that's also because I'm not like, I'm not you, you know, I'm not
Sure.
advanced astrologist,
I was
yet,
not an
you know.
advanced astrologer either when I went through my chart like that. I was just a
I think
newbie. I
it's,
didn't know shit for
and I think
nothing.
it's a little bit like an encyclopedia, right? Like, you know, the old days, the encyclopedia, you could look up something and you can look up Saturn, you know, in Aries, right? And get a little, but just know that that is a, you know, like an encyclopedia. It's only a piece of the totality of, you
I
know.
totally know that, yes.
Yeah, so you just, you know, but I'm, you know, I've gotten insights from it. I think, you know, I mean, I worked with an AI company that was putting out, you know, AI astrology, and you know, I think there is a tremendous potential there that we are going to get more and more and more of in the future. But right now, what I think it's helpful for us to understand that we are teaching AI.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it's like, and it's very good for you if you can also come to the place of, I'm sorry, but that doesn't agree with my experience.
I do
Or that's wrong. I mean, I've told AI, you know,
Yeah.
that's wrong, and it will
Yeah.
come back with another answer, and it's, oh, well, now that you mention it, you know, you're right. I was wrong. And so
AI
it's
has
like,
got
shit.
Pluto in Libra. It's always trying to please you no matter what. So it's
I
like,
know.
I mean,
It's your fucking best friend, you know.
that's a good one. So DB's got his hand up. We're coming to a close here.
yeah, with AI, I and all this technology, I feel as though we are truncating our possibility as human beings. It's almost like an atrophy, you know? Let's say we can tap into the Akashic records. Clearly, some human beings can, so I figure we all can. Let's talk about telepathy, you know, texting and, you know, internet connectedness is really a substitute for telepathic communication and connectedness like that. So that's my fear. I want to develop my ability to tap into the Akashic records, not have it wither and dwindle away.
Beautiful perspective. I do feel like we are using technology to do what we eventually innately, you know, will be able, capable of knowing and doing ourselves with evolution. Yeah, baby. Adrian's got his hand up. I see you.
Hello, hello. Sorry, I didn't find the button to raise my hand.
Oh,
It
shoot.
physically. Okay. I want to share to you that for me, the AI was useful to understand the geometry of the astronomy of the astrology, because I could explain the better the geometry of the big circles, the angles between them, the orbit of Pluto, comparing with the ecliptic, because it's a little bit tilted, 17 degrees. And also, I tried to understand how many years do we have until we reach the Aquarius, because from the precession of the equinox and from the calculation, I understood that we have still 3 minutes to attend to reach the Aquarius. That means 72 years, or multiple by 3. That means 418 years still to wait to enter really in the Aquarius era. Am I correct? Because
If it's a
I feel
degree
still in
every
Pisces
seven,
now, still in Pisces now,
if it's
at
a
the end of the
degree
Pisces.
every 72 years and it's 3 degrees, then it's going to be 216
I think
years.
it's more than 3. I think it's more than 3 degrees. I think
Yeah.
that it's more.
So, but
And
yeah, you
there's two other.
we're on the cusp. We're on the cusp of the age.
Because I could understand asking AY how is the difference between the tropical zodiac and sidereal zodiac, and you explained in your class, in your
Yeah,
informal class.
it's 26 degrees right now, you know, right around 26 degrees. So what you're saying is like mathematically and with calculations, you know, and things like that, the AI, you know, can be very helpful, more so than going at it for interpretations or
Yes,
philosophical.
no interpretations, but only calculations of the angles and of the position of the planets and of the vernal point, comparing with the sidereal astrology.
Good. Thank
Thank
you.
you. Thank you.
Last, we're gonna let Holly wrap it up here. She's got her hand up. Last question or comment. I don't know.
Hi. I just have a quick question regarding Mars coming up. I have Mars in Leo on the tw and 29 degrees, in the eighth house. So, just wanted to know if you have any imparting wisdom or advice for me during that time, things I should be a little bit more aware of, I guess.
Well, you're going to have Mars, you know, in your eighth house for 6 months or more, and you know, crossing over. What was it? Your,
29 degrees.
yeah.
No, what? Oh, I
What do you
just.
have? 20? Oh, you've got Mars at 29. So you're going to have your
In Leo.
Mars return. Okay, you know, I mean. And so what it's going to do is, well, like I say, there is that threefold path. So, Mars coming around to Mars is going to, like, you meet someone, or you have a therapy session, or you do a shamanic journey, or you open up the gates or the portals between life and death, and you go through a very powerful transformation as a result of integrating or uniting or merging with something outside yourself that you can't control, whether it's a person, an idea, a philosophy, some form of therapy or plant medicine or whatever it is. But so there is this, so the, it's a real deepening, deepening, deepening through a exchange, with someone or something outside yourself. And then it goes retrograde, right? So it's even more intense. Yeah. And you get to, like, reflect, and maybe they come back, or you change your mind, or there's, problems, or it brings up, some anger or some issues or some, sexual problems, some, different kinds of, like, wow, the whole thing around masculine energy is going to be just, like, really big, right? And men, and the instinctive nature to do, right? And then the third pass, okay, which is going to be like next summer. All right, then it's going to be like, boom, okay, wow. That's like the culmination. That's the results. It's like the results are in. You're in first place or second place or third place. You're going to know by next summer that, okay, well, something has changed. You will be different in, some way, shape, or form, and have evolved a new knowledge, a new capacity, a new potential, a new relationship. I mean, yeah, there's so, I mean, I look at, it as being, a really powerful time for you to, transform into something, really, bigger than you have been in the past.
Okay. Wow. Put the seatbelt on. Let's go.
Yeah. Anybody else got anything about that?
Thank you.
All right. Well, hot diggity dogs. I'm going to
Hot
turn off
diggity
the
dog.
recording. Yeah,
And I'm in your home city. Now I'm going to see some lectures and stuff. I think maybe I'll go swim in the lake, actually.
where are you?
Chicago.
Oh, yeah. Chicago. Oh,
Oh,
yeah.
yeah.
You got to jump in the lake.
Chicago.
Yeah, jump in the lake. Go down to Navy Pier down there. That's fun. Okay. Recording. I'm trying to, yeah, stop recording. Namaste.
Namaste.
Aloha.
See.
So much love. Ow.
And Jules says hi, Kaipacha. It's on her.
Yeah.
I'm on her phone for the internet. So Julia says hi.
Oh,
She
good.
needs to go
Hi,
now, but
Jules.
perfect timing.
Fantastic. All right.
Hey.
Ciao, ciao.
Ciao.